We're going on to case number four, Michael Taruggi versus CIT Group. That's appeal 12-2314. Good morning, Mr. McNeil. How are you?
May it please the Court, my name is Don McNeil. I represent the plaintiff in this matter, who is the appellant. Michael Taruggi worked in the railway industry all of his adult life. He started out in a capacity in which he learned how to do maintenance of freight cars and learned the business from the bottom up. He was familiar with all of the prominent United States and Canadian railroad senior executives because he had grown up with them in the industry. He served as a one-person mechanical department at CIT, the defendant. He also hired the person who was the vice president of mechanical position. He had a successful career there. One day was out at a railway site showing a section of rail to some folks and showing them locomotives when he tripped and fell and hurt his hand severely. Over the next several years, he had many operations. He wound up having a partial amputation of the hand. It was very painful. It caused him to miss work fairly frequently. He it didn't look very attractive, which is a factor, I think, in what we'll discuss in a moment. The condition made it difficult for him to carry a laptop. He needed to be on the computer a lot to get information regarding potential deals, so that when he hurt his hand, it was very difficult for him to carry a laptop around. So he asked his immediate supervisor to expense a backup disk drive that he could use to access documents when he's out of the office, and that request was granted. He was also permitted to send CIT Rail documents and communications to his Yahoo email account, his personal account. He eventually had to file a workers' compensation claim. Initially, his injuries from the accident at the railway were covered by the company's health insurance plan. There were disputes internally between Aetna and AIG as to who was responsible for his bills, and eventually he decided to get an attorney and file a lawsuit or file an action with the Illinois Workers' Compensation Board, which resulted in his recovering approximately $25,000 a couple of years later.
Here's a problem that needs looking at, it seems to me. Even if the evidence is questionable as to whether the employer could have thought that he was actually trying to reveal confidential information to outside sources, outside parties without authorization, wouldn't the dishonest statements made by him in the course of the investigation have been enough to give the employer a non-discriminatory pause to discharge him?
No, Your Honor. The key alleged disclosure of confidential information occurred during the process of gathering information for what was a yearly trade association type meeting. The individuals that were involved here regularly exchanged such information. There was no value to the information. What Mr. Taruggi, well, let me back up. The way this started was that one of the sponsors of the conference sent an email to a fellow named Cavanaugh at EMD, which manufactures locomotives. And what he wanted was an estimate of what they had built in 2008 and what they intended to build in 2009 for purposes of giving a presentation at the trade conference projecting how the industry was going to go for that year. Mr. Kavanaugh happened to be out of the office. The same email was sent by Mr. Nahas of the sponsoring group to Mr. Teruggi. He sent an email to a fellow named Schnabel requesting the information. He also left a voicemail for Kavanaugh saying that he was doing that. In the meantime, Kavanaugh got the voicemail, got the email, sent the information to Nahas. Later on, Schnabel also sent the same information to Mr. Teruggi, and he sent it to three individuals who already had access to the same type of information, including two that were involved in the current manufacture of these locomotives. So if we think in terms of protectable confidential information, trade secrets and other information are protectable when the misappropriation of them can hurt the party that owns them.
Was the information requested by, quote, our folks in New York?
That was a characterization he made of the individuals that had requested it. Mr. Nahas had previously been stationed in New York. It wasn't anything that made it easier for him to get the information. The company tries to characterize this as a situation where he used that phrase, our folks in New York, to obtain the information surreptitiously. But using the phrase, our folks in New York, didn't give him any advantage whatsoever. In terms of the confidentiality of the information, it would be like someone asking the clerk here, how many alumni of BCS number one teams are there on the circuit court? It's something that's accessible. It's not something that can be used by anyone to hurt anybody else.
Yeah, but look, does it even matter whether the information in the email was confidential or whether he had permission to forward it? If all of the evidence indicates that the people who made the decision to fire him believed that he had forwarded confidential information without permission, because if they believed that rightly or wrongly, how could the discharge be attributed to discrimination?
I don't think there is evidence as to what they actually did believe. I think that there is a good example of the type of genuine issue of material fact that you get in a case like this. We would submit that the decision to terminate Mr. Teruggi was made years before. It was made after the considerable distraction and bother that the executives of his division suffered during the time of his workers' compensation claim. Thereafter, there were several changes to his job that were indicative of that he no longer had the same status or the same position at the company that he had before. For example, he was, instead of sitting with prominent customers at company gatherings, he was relegated to sitting with lower-level employees. Younger individuals were being promoted up above him. And all that was happening to him was evidenced, could be construed by a jury as reasonable inference. If they could draw a reasonable inference that what was happening was that he was being discriminated against on the basis of some protected characteristic. And the picture of this division was changing into a younger division. Certainly the injury that he suffered made him less attractive in a sales context. He would go to these dinners or golf outings, whatever, and, you know, there's old Teruggi.
Save some of your rebuttal time.
Okay.
Because today's one of those days when we've got to move.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But we do. All right. Mr. Schreiber.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Philip Schreiber, and I represent the defendant, appellee. So, Mr. Teruggi is contending that CIT Rail engaged in a multi-year scheme or conspiracy, in effect, to terminate him because of his prior workers' compensation claim, or maybe it was because of his disability, or maybe it was because of his age. But there's no evidence, certainly not nearly enough evidence for a reasonable finder of fact to find for Mr. Teruggi on any of these claims.
Yep. Given that he forwarded the estimates from Schnabel to DiStefano at the same time that he forwarded them to Nahas and Beal, how could his employer think that he was attempting to violate the rules? Because if he's trying to release confidential information without authorization, why would he forward it to his own supervisor?
Well, that's not quite the way CIT interpreted the wrongdoing by Mr. Tarrucci. Their primary focus was on how he got that information in the first place. Not just having the information, going to a vendor and say, we're a customer, would you be willing to tell me this information? That's fine if the vendor is willing to give it to him, but if you act in a deceptive manner to get that information, no one at CIT asked Mr. Tarrucci to get that information. Okay. He used the phrase, as CIT's investigators understood the facts and concluded, he used use of the phrase, our folks in New York, was an attempt to persuade the vendor to provide this information for CIT Rail, a customer of the vendor. That was the problem initially. The next problem was the two lines that Mr. Tarrucci told the investigators when they were investigating the conduct. When he first said, oh, yes, he gave his explanation for the Our Folks in New York, which was rather convoluted and had something to do with him being from Kentucky or something like that. And the investigators rightfully, thought that made no sense whatsoever, and that they concluded that he was, in fact, trying to represent that this information was coming from CIT in New York. And second, when he told the investigators that really he was requesting the information from Mr. Cashman to speak at this conference. And in fact, Mr. Cashman had not only not spoken at that conference in years, he had no intention of even attending the conference. And he communicated that and he never asked Mr. Tarrucci for the information. So you've got three separate deceptions or lies involved here. And that goes to the heart of one of the major reasons why CIT investigators made the decision to recommend his discharge. Now, keep in mind that those investigators, according to Mr. Tarrucci, did not have any basis to have any animus toward him because of his workers' compensation claim, his disability, or his age. In fact, let's go back. The disability was known to CIT and to the decision maker, George Cashman, for several years, since when it happened in 2001 when he fell and hurt his hand. The workers' compensation claim was filed at the suggestion and the encouragement of Mr. Cashman and CIT Corporate's Human Resources Department. That was filed 3 years before his discharge. The case, the workers' compensation claim, settled a year and a half before his discharge, all with the knowledge, apparently, of CIT Rail. And yet, they waited. They then decided they were going to engage in this long-term conspiracy to get rid of him. There's simply no evidence to support that conclusion. Mr. Tarrucci is proceeding under the mosaic method, the direct method. He was trying to cobble together a mosaic. But really, he has to take all these little bits and pieces of circumstantial evidence that he puts forth, and he has to explain or connect them in a way that would allow a jury to find that but for his age or but for his disability or but for his comp claim, he would not have been discharged. And he hasn't done that. He talks about he tries to tie this to the hiring of a man by the name of Dan DiStefano not long after his compensation claim settled. And he argues that Mr. DiStefano was hired as part of this scheme to replace him. First of all, there's nothing in the record that suggests how old Mr. DiStefano is. And second, Mr. DiStefano, more fundamentally, was never hired to replace Mr. Tarrucci. He was hired to fill a brand new position that was created by CIT Rail to combine the oversight of the leasing and the maintenance functions of the locomotive fleet that CIT Rail owned. A different position, though, it was occupied by Mr. Tarrucci. His whole theory of the case falls apart on that fact alone. Challenging the investigation And how CIT Rail chose to conduct its investigation, which is another basis that Mr. Tarucci uses to support his conspiracy theory, also gets him nowhere. Again, the people who discovered the misconduct and who investigated the misconduct made the conclusions that are quite detailed in the record as to how they came to those conclusions. And there's no issue of fact. There's no attempt to rebut that. And made the recommendation to discharge him, he admits, did not bear him any animus because of his age, workers' compensation history, or disability. He doesn't offer any evidence as to how the investigation would, that the investigation would be conducted in a different manner, or that different conclusions would be reached, or that a different recommendation would have been made had he been younger, had he not been disabled, or had he never filed a workers' compensation claim. He doesn't identify any comparable employees that were treated more favorably than him. There's simply nothing there. He talks about the punishment not fitting the crime in his briefs. Well, he relies on the dissent in Hyatt versus Rockwell International. But that case, in that case, the majority affirmed entry of summary judgment on a retaliation claim for conduct that was far less egregious than what's at issue here. His reliance on Stalter versus Walmart involves conduct that isn't even remotely close to what's at issue here. In that case, the employee was fired because he ate a few chips from an open bag in the employee break room, and the employer tried to argue that that was a major violation of company policy and justified his discharge. Mr. Tarucci's conduct isn't even remotely close to that. Ultimately, he's left with, you know, he just simply does not come forward with any evidence to support his claim. As far as the confidential information goes, the point is that was raised is that it's not whether the information truly was confidential, it's whether CIT had a reasonable basis to believe it was confidential, and it did. The record shows that the company attempted to reproduce that information using industry reports and other publicly available sources of information and was unable to do so. And that formed the basis of the conclusion that the information that was provided was confidential. I want to touch on one point that was raised in the opening argument from Mr. Tarucci, and that is that the information that Mr. Kavanaugh provided was identical to the information provided by Mr. Schnabel, and that is not the case. The record shows that the information, in fact, was different. Unrefuted evidence that says that the data provided by Mr. Kavanaugh was not the same as the data provided by Mr. Schnabel. And more importantly, Mr. Tarucci notified Mr. Kavanaugh of this what he had done 7 to 10 days after the fact. He did not, and there's no evidence other than hearsay evidence that Mr. Kavanaugh actually thought that it was okay for Mr. Tarucci to have done what he did. And it doesn't matter what Mr. Kavanaugh thought. It really matters what CIT Rail thought about his conduct. If there's no further questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
How much time? 2 minutes, Mr. McNeil.
The timeline here was as follows. The workers' compensation claim gets settled. Within a month or two after that, DiStefano is hired. The posting of this job internally is on August 6th, 6 days after he's got an offer letter in his hands saying, come join us. A friend of the plaintiff's sees the posting, recognizes this as his job, as the plaintiff's job. Now, it wasn't identical. There were differences, but it was close enough so that this fellow comes and says, hey, your job's been posted. You know, don't you want it anymore? So he goes and he applies for the job, and they have a sham interview, making believe all this time that Mr. Tarucci could get his job back or could have his job, which alone, according to the case law, is sufficient to raise genuine issues of material fact. And that's something that has to be remembered here. That's really what the issue is before this court. Were there genuine issues of material fact that the court below decided? And there certainly were. I noticed today that the response brief in this case is 52 pages. The first case that's cited is on page 33. Everything before that is designed to say, look at our version, the Appellee's version, of the facts in this case. Well, this court has held, and I think actually perhaps even this panel, that
Summary judgment briefs that present different versions of the facts arouse our attention given the standard under the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. That's from the Paz case, B-A-Z, and these are cited in our brief. So what you got here is this big argument about what the facts were, and that's an argument that should be decided by a jury, not by a judge. With regard to this exchange of information and with relation to the trade association, the other thing I wanted to add is that there was no one in that whole chain of information gathering that couldn't get the information in a heartbeat by making a phone call or sending an email.
Thank you very much. Thank you to Mr. Schreiber. Thank you to Mr. McNeil. And the case will be taken under advisement.